You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Fred Katz is in the building. How you doing, Fred? It's our beautiful, lovely beat writer for the New York Knicks. Just one of the best people who write about basketball in the industry. Fred, I'm so happy you're here.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here. I'm thrilled to be in the virtual building. I'm excited to talk some award stuff. There are very few times when I'm actively excited about getting assigned homework, but I like prepping for the awards pod stuff. It's like being an awards voter is incredibly cool, and I've done it the last 3 years for like the real awards, and it's incredibly cool, but it's unbearably stressful. And this is all the fun of it without any stress at all. So it's great.
Well, yeah, like I think that A, I wanted to have you on because I know how seriously you take it. B, I wanted to have you on because you're an awards voter. Like you vote on these awards legitimately. Like you are a piece of the puzzle in terms of who is going to get these awards. And, you know, you are not someone that's going to go, this guy is a fucking terrible person. I'm not going to vote for him. Like that dude for the who writes about like Chicago sports did about Aaron Rodgers.
I saw that. No, that is I would definitely not. I only saw the tweets about that. I kind of like cold turkey stopped following football. I used to be obsessed with the NFL, and I just it's like my knowledge of football was kind of like I was like cryogenically frozen in 2015, and I still think that like Geno Smith is the Jets starting quarterback. But
oh no.
But I saw the tweet about that, and based just on the tweet, which is really all the context we need to develop opinions on things nowadays, that didn't seem like the best decision.
Yeah, I mean, look, I listened to it. I listened to like the whole thing that he said. Wasn't much better than the tweet. I just want to make sure that people know, like, there are people that take this very seriously. Like, I would say a majority of the voters, they may not take it as seriously as Fred does, because I know, like, you get fucking stressed about it. But, like...
Oh, I lose sleep.
Yeah.
I take, like, double-digit hours looking at... I remember 2 years ago, because it was like during the pandemic when there were no sports and they decided they were going to do the awards before they came back for the bubble.
Right.
And I shouldn't say during the pandemic as if we're no longer in the pandemic, but it was during the when every single thing was shut down and I had nothing. And I was like, I was at a point where I was like scrutinizing. I watched like an hour and a half of Jackson Hayes pick and roll defense because I was like, I need to know if it's okay to leave him off all rookie second team. Like,
love and it. It's amazing.
I was really, that was maybe a little bit over
that,
the top.
That was a low point for your boy Fred Katz.
Yeah, just a low point in life for real.
Okay,
I didn't even end up putting him on. I was like, okay, you know what? I'm okay not putting him second team.
That was the right call, not putting Jackson Hayes on, because he was not an all-rookie guy that year. Okay. We're going to do MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, Coach of the Year, Most Improved, Rookie of the Year, and then we're going to do All-NBA. I didn't do all defense teams. Like, I'll be honest, like I
did all defense.
You did all look, I can like probably bounce some like off the top of my head, but like it wouldn't be as in-depth necessarily is what I think we're going to get from you on that front. So maybe we'll just do it real quick at the end.
Cool.
But okay, let's just jump in. MVP right now, I think, is a fascinating race insofar as I do think that there is one clear, obvious pick right now for who the MVP of the NBA is in 2021-2022 in the first half of the season. I also think that it is pretty wide open in terms of the way that it could go toward the end of the season. How do you feel about MVP and how it's shaking out early on this year?
I think it's plausible we're going to disagree. Because I don't think there is one clear and obvious choice. I mean, okay. should I reveal who I put number one? How are we doing this?
Yeah, let's start with your ballots on all of this. So all right.
Should I just read off my top five?
Go 5-1, yeah.
All right. So number five, I had DeMar DeRozan.
Yep, that's also who I have at five.
Just, the dude's been unreal. And you know, with DeMar, I am all for the analytical concept that clutch time performance does not indicate how somebody will perform in future clutch time. Normally, yes. Over a larger sample size, somebody will regress not to the mean, but to wherever their personal mean is. If you're a great player, you'll end up playing great in clutch time. And if you're not a great player, you'll end up playing not great in clutch time. That being said, when I put together my awards ballot, I'm not voting on what would happen if we simulated out this season 100 times.
Yes.
I'm just voting on what actually happened in real life. And undeniably, how you actually perform in clutch time, those shots have more value. Have you looked at DeMar DeRozan's clutch time numbers?
They're sure you have. Give them to me.
Absolute insanity. Like, you can look at the highlights, which is the game-winning shots and the buzzer beaters and all that, and they're ridiculous. How many three-pointers? Clutch time, by the way, is defined as within 5 points with five or fewer minutes left in the game. How many three-pointers do you think DeMar DeRozan has missed in clutch time this year?
I would guess, like, one.
Zero.
Something like that. Yeah.
Zero. He's averaging 43 points per 36 minutes. He is shooting 58% from the field, 100% from three, and 88% from the line.
Yeah.
The dude has been unfreaking believable and deserves all the praise that he's been getting.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad that you picked DeMar. I was worried that I was going to be out on an island with DeMar until I actually looked at the betting odds right now. I think DeMar is fifth or sixth right now with the betting odds. So, like, I'm glad that people are recognizing this. The only thing that gave me pause was having to sit there for a second and go, okay, is DeMar DeRozan the best player on the Bulls? Like, when teams sit down and scout Chicago night in, night out, are they most worried about DeMar or are they most worried about Zach, right? I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know. Like, I think different teams will have different mileage on that either way. But this is the number one team in the East. And even with that, I think DeMar has been the best player on the number one team in the Eastern Conference as of the time we're recording this, which is on Thursday in the United States at 4 o'clock. Or what is it? 4 o'clock your time? 3 o'clock? Something like that?
3:15 my time.
3:15. So, yeah, I have no problem with DeMar being there. He's averaging 27 points and, like, what, 5 rebounds and 4 assists, something like that.
Yeah, and he's a good passer. And great passer. He's so important for what they do offensively. Like, you know, his ability, whether you want to say whether he or LaVine is better, and LaVine's having a very good season.
Totally. But
part of the reason why I think LaVine has been as good as he's been is because DeMar is able to just take over so many of those facilitating duties from him. Like, Zach can play off the ball more now. He can run around screens. I think a lot of people don't realize how great LaVine is off the ball. Like, he is an incredible shooter. He's incredible when he's curving around screens. He has really good off-ball intuition. Like, him being off the ball more and DeMar being so much better of a passer than he was 5 years ago, I mean, he really became a really, really good and refined and aware passer in San Antonio. I think they're great They're a great combination together. And I'm cool with throwing Levine on. I didn't have Levine on my All-NBA that we did, but he was right there in contention, and I have no problem if somebody wants to throw him on there. I think he's been great this year, too.
Okay, give me number four.
Number four, I had Giannis.
Okay,
The top four is probably really tough.
Yeah, I think we probably flipped three and four would be my bet.
Yeah.
So give me your Giannis. Pitch on Giannis. I had Giannis at three.
Yeah, I mean, let's just talk about him in combination to three, or in relation to three, I should say, which is I had Jokic number three.
Yeah, right. I had Jokic at four. So yeah. We're just flipping the two.
To me, it was just the tiebreaker was just kind of Denver absolutely annihilates teams when Jokic is on the floor. Just destroys when Jokic is on the floor. He has the most extreme on-off numbers in the league. And if you look at any of the advanced numbers, you want to look at like Raptor War, you want to look at box score plus minus, any of that stuff, win shares, it's like Jokic and Gobert are the guys who just destroy in those categories. And a lot of those numbers can be a little biased towards bigs, so I always take them with a little bit of extra flavor. But I mean, Jokic is just annihilating in those numbers, and that made him put me ahead of Giannis, or that made me put him ahead of Giannis. But yeah, Giannis has been what a defensive season he's had. Like he's been remarkable.
That was ultimately the tiebreaker for me as to why I went Giannis over Jokic. He has been absolutely incredible defensively. This is a team that for most of the season has not had Brook Lopez. I think he may have played a couple games, right? Like, but for 90% of the season, it feels like they have not had Brook Lopez in the lineup. They've been doing it with makeshift.
Brook played literally one game.
Yeah, I was going to say they have made it happen with these makeshift rosters, like with DeMarcus Cousins at center. And they're still sitting here at number nine in defensive efficiency, despite the fact that like Drew Holiday has missed a lot of time. And like you kind of look at the guys up and down the roster, like Grayson Allen has played, I believe, the third most minutes on this team. Do you know who's played the most minutes on the Milwaukee Bucks so far, by the way?
Oh, geez. Is it going to be like Pat Connaughton?
It's Pat Connaughton. Pat Connaughton has played the most minutes on the Milwaukee Bucks so far. So we've got Connaughton, Grayson Allen, Bobby Portis, and George Hill, and Jordan Wara, and Rodney Hood. That is six of your top nine players. I'm going to be honest. I don't think there's a good defender in that group. Like Pat Connaughton, I think gets by defensively and is like, okay, he's solid within scheme, but like there's not a plus defender in that group. Drew Holiday has missed like quite a bit of time. I guess he missed maybe like five or six games. Looking at the minute totals now, he actually hasn't missed nearly as much as what I thought he had. But, Chris Middleton has missed a little bit of time here and there. The fact that Giannis has held this defense together by a string is absolutely bonkers to me. His rotational ability, his ability to play more center, his ability to be like the primary rim protector for a team that desperately needs it at times. He's just been unbelievable defensively. And that's, oh, by the way, while averaging 28 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, I think this is probably his best passing year that I've seen. He seems a lot more comfortable just making plays and being able to read what defenses are giving him as a passer. He's still not really shooting threes or anything, but he looks more comfortable to take the shots that are available to him in the mid-range. I think that, again, this is, if not the best Giannis we've seen, it's right on par with his two MVP years at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with any of that. I'm not going to make any of these points by denigrating any of the guys on this list.
If you're having
the fifth MVP. Best season in the NBA, it's because I think you're really freaking good.
Right. Yeah.
The other thing I would add, I mean, you mentioned Giannis having an unbelievable season. I agree with all of that. You look at the rim protection numbers, like opponents are shooting 48% on layups and dunks when Giannis is the closest defender to them right now. That's the second best figure amongst big men in the entire league, behind only Rudy Gobert. And when they lose Brook Lopez, that's what Brook Lopez's value is defensively. He is the guy who is going to contest dunks and layups. And when they lose Brook Lopez, and you can have Giannis jump in, your wing, basically. I don't know if he's a wing. He's a big. He's a Giannis, you know?
Well, think about,
you have him, you can jump in on that. It's ridiculous. There's not a comparable to that.
Well, like, think about, too, I mean, it's such a drastically different role in a lot of ways. Like, I'm not sitting here saying that, like, oh, like, he's doing something entirely different. He's being, like, the big defender in the pick and roll constantly now. He's not necessarily that. Like, he is, you know, teams aren't going, hey, let's have Giannis's guy come up in screen because we think that we can get a mismatch on Giannis, or we think he's worse in drop than Bobby Portis, right? But I think that he's making a more concerted effort to be available around the rim as necessary, and then allowing himself that length to recover without Brook Lopez around. And it's making Milwaukee still have a very high level defense, even in the absence of one of the best rim protectors in the NBA.
Yeah. All that said, Jokic is also having the best defensive season of his career. He's got a rep.
Yeah, totally.
For not being a defender, I know that's the general rep on him. It's not true. He's not Giannis. I mean, Giannis is a defensive player of the year caliber guy.
Right.
Jokic is a legitimately good defender. He's a legitimately good rim protector. He's a legitimately good team defender. All that stuff is, I mean, he's good. He's good. Yeah. Had a game-saving block the other night. He is really good. Should we move on to...
Let's move on to 2-1, because I think that this debate is very interesting. Because look, let's be clear: it's our one and our number one and number two are going to be Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant in some order, right? So I will be very interested, given the fact that you said this is a little bit closer. I think that the way that the MVP race breaks down right now is, I think 1 and 2 are in a very slight tier ahead. I think 3 and 4 are in their own tier, kind of, you know, below those two. And then I think there's like a group from 5 to, you know, maybe 8 or 9 or 10 that you could realistically vote for in that fifth spot. Chris Paul was one that I considered. I considered like the fact that Chris Paul, it was funny, I was talking to Seth Partnow on the podcast last week, like, Chris Paul got Bismack Biyombo like double digit points off the street, you know, last week twice in a row, and it's like, what are we doing here? Chris Paul is like freaking unbelievable. I considered Jimmy Butler for keeping the Miami Heat afloat, even though I know that he's missed quite a bit of time. I considered Paul George, even though he has not shot as well as what we've seen Paul George shoot in the past. It's been very impressive to me that he's kept Los Angeles afloat. Luka Doncic did not play exceedingly well to start the season. He's been better lately. I consider Ja Morant in this tier as well. Is there anyone else you considered before we move on to 1 and 2?
I had Rudy Gobert as an honorable mention.
Yeah,
I considered Rudy's a good him there. One too. Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
that's another one I'd add. The other guys you mentioned as well.
Okay, let's go 1 and 2 now.
Kevin Durant's my MVP.
Okay, I don't agree. I have Steph, and I think that it should clearly be Steph. But I'm very interested to hear, because like, I think it's an interesting argument on a number of levels. Like, if you ask me to say who I think the best basketball player on planet Earth is, I think I would say Kevin Durant. Like, just being totally transparent and honest, I think I would. If we're talking about who I think has been the most valuable player in the MVP so far, it's hard for me to go past Stephen Curry, given the fact that this Golden State Warriors team is the best team in the league. He has been absolutely unbelievable. He's been the critical piece as to why they run as efficiently as they do, along with Draymond Green, who will also get some love in the next category we're going to talk about. I think that it's totally reasonable to pick Kevin Durant on some level. I would have Steph, but let's hear from Fred why he has Kevin Durant.
Superior efficiency this season. He's the best player in the league who is, and you know, other than Steph, maybe the best shooter in the league, who is shooting the lights out by his standards and playing the lights out by his standards. The Nets have had injuries. They've had Joe Harris out. They've had all the Kyrie stuff. Harden has not looked like the James Harden that we know. The efficiency for Harden is way down. He's not getting to the free throw line like he did. There have been so many moments where Durant has just had to flat out carry that team, and he's carried them right now to the second best record in the league. He's shooting 57% on long twos. Yeah. Like, this is obscene what he's been doing this year. And you know what? I think he's been wonderful defensively. The Nets have really surprised defensively, and I don't think they're going to finish the year where they are right now.
They're a top 10 defense right now.
Yeah, and the numbers say they might be due for some regression there to be able to fall back. That said, Durant has been so good as a weak side defender. He's been so good as a helper. He's just been a tremendous facilitator and cog. Steph is incredible. I have no problem with the Steph pick. He's having an unbelievable year. But like the true shooting, for example, it's not where you normally see. It's under 60%, which isn't bad. Like 50 is a 59 yep. right now, which is certainly not bad. It's good. And league average true shooting percentage is down this year from where it was in years past. But if we're just talking league MVP level, like that's actually not quite where you expect a Steph number to be. Like he's in during his great years, like he's in the mid 60s. And so I have no problem with a Steph pick. Everything the Warriors are doing is because of that guy. Period. That is it. But I think you could say the same thing about Brooklyn with KD. And I think he's the superior player, having just by a hair the superior year.
Yeah, you've sold me that this is closer than what I thought. Whenever I like put together my ballot a little bit, like my immediate response was, it's going to look silly to have Steph Curry not at number one, given that Golden State has been the best team in the league, given that Golden State has been, I mean, like from a narrative perspective, like they've been the story of the league. And like, I don't really consider narrative whenever I pick my personal ballot, but like in terms of like the perception of what that would be like, it's hard for me to go past just looking at everything Steph does for the Warriors. I mean, he makes that situation work. Like there's with Steph, it's like more than numbers. Like I with Kevin, I don't want to say he doesn't contribute beyond the numbers because like you said, he's been really good defensively this year. He's been really good in a number of facets that don't always necessarily show up on the box score. But I think you can get a lot of what Kevin Durant does from the box score at the end of the day, because he's just the best scorer in the NBA. He's like the most efficient, like deadly assassin scorer, like arguably maybe in league history outside of Steph, right? And he's having a better season than Steph is this year. So with Steph, so much of what he does is like opening shit up for other players. Like he sprints off of screens. He screens constantly. Their offense runs in part, and why someone like Jordan Poole can average 18 points and be as effective as he is. Because I mentioned on the last week's show, like I haven't really loved the minutes I've seen from Jordan Poole whenever he has to like run the second unit for the Warriors. I think he's much more effective playing as like that off-ball scoring threat who attacks closeouts and drives and is able to play that way. The way Steph opens up the floor for Jordan Poole is unbelievable whenever he's on the court. The way that Steph opens up the court for guys like Otto Porter to step up in a big way, guys like Gary Payton Jr., unless you have Stephen Curry, it's often hard to get someone like Gary Payton Jr. on the court because of his lack of offensive ability and shooting. And Gary Payton Jr. has been one of the most valuable defensive players per minute this year. I couldn't quite get him on an all-defense ballot because he just hasn't played like a crazy amount of minutes.
He's only playing 17 minutes a game, yeah.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, but no, I covered him in Washington. Like, he gets into ball handlers. He's always been like this. He is outrageous defensively.
Yeah, and like a lot of the reason that you can get him on the court is playing him next to Steph and like making it work that way. So I think that there are other factors in terms of the way that Steph makes Golden State run more efficiently from a team construct that can't really be judged in the box score. And oh, by the way, like he's averaging 27 points and 6 assists and set the fucking 3-point record this year. Like, it's, you see a lot of it in the box score, but like, you watch the games and you're like, oh my God, like, this guy is unlike anything I've ever seen play basketball. So I have Steph right now. I absolutely think that it's open in the second half of the year. Like, if Kevin Durant continues on this trajectory, I will say, like, too, I would, over the second half of this, like, midseason, so like the second quarter of the season, right? I think KD has been better than Steph. Like, I would say, like, he has caught up a little bit from the Warriors' like crazy start and everything. So, yeah, you've told me that this is a legit race even right now, let alone like going forward into the future, which I always thought.
Yeah, I mean, I recognize that I'm in the minority on this one. When you know, Tim Bontemps over at ESPN does the straw poll for MVP voting and texts 100 media members and asks what our ballots are. You know, I sent in KD to him. This was a few weeks ago. I sent in KD to him, and I had Steph second. And I figured I'd be in the minority and that Steph would be first. And I was only one of two KD voters and of the 100, which I was surprised it was that small. It was before KD went on this little run recently. I think there would probably be more than two now.
That's what I was going to say.
But yeah, I recognize him in the minority, but I feel good about it. Look, there, I don't think Steph is a bad choice. I have no problem with him being up there. He's spectacular, and he's been spectacular this year. And everything that you said is true. Like, everything that the Warriors are able to do is because of his, not just his shooting, but his movement and the way that five guys have to be locked in on him. Yeah. But I mean, I think Brooklyn, you could say very similar stuff. The difference is that KD just isn't doing it in as flashy of a way. He's just so much more like methodical, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a metronome of efficient basketball. Like, it's pretty wild. Okay, let's take a quick commercial break and we'll be back to do more awards here. Okay, and we are back. Let's go to Defensive Player of the Year, Fred. 3 through 1, give me your ballot.
Rudy Gobert, 3.
Yep.
Which was, I mean, Utah is back up into the top 5, 6 defensively right now. And you watch them, and it's like they're still having the same problems they had against the Clippers. Guys are not staying in front of guys in the perimeter. And Gobert has just been an absolute terror around the rim like he always is. I feel like I don't really need to justify Rudy Gobert that much. Dude's won a million defensive players of the year. You know, I just think a couple other guys have been a little bit better than him so far, but he could end up winning it again.
Wouldn't surprise me. I had Rudy at number 2. It feels like Utah has had more games this year where the defense has just been, like, not good. Like, weirdly, like, actually, like, bad, strangely. And, look, I don't blame, like, Rudy across the board for that or anything. I certainly don't even blame him for that, like, in, like, full. I think that Utah has some structural deficiencies in terms of foot speed. And I think teams also, like, over the course of time have figured out how to take advantage of what Utah does defensively, because you give teams essentially 3 years of runway of tape to kind of figure things out, especially ones that they played in the playoffs. You're going to kind of get figured out in on some level, right? I'm not saying that they're not a good defensive team, because they are, because Rudy Gobert is as elite as you'll find. But, like, I think that they're, like, 6th or 7th in defensive efficiency this season, as opposed to, like, the incredible heights that they've reached with Rudy over the course of the last few years. I still have Rudy at 2, to be honest.
Yeah, they're 5th. I don't think it's really his fault, to be honest. Like,
no, it's the guys on the perimeter. Like,
Mike Conley is not kind of the shutdown defensive point guard that he was in Memphis, which is fine. Yep. That's what happens when you've been in the league for, 14 years or however long Conley's been in the league. I think Joe Ingles is not quite the guy that he was defensively as well, which, again, like, he's in his 30s. Royce O'Neal does a really nice job for them. He's really, really staunch on the perimeter. But, like, guys get to the middle of the floor. That's just – that is what happens when you watch those Utah games, and Gobert cleans everything up. I think he's been spectacular this year.
Yeah, he's been great, which is why I have him at 2, personally. I would imagine
you had 3.
I had Giannis at 3.
We're agreeing too much. I had Giannis at 2.
Yeah, not a surprise, honestly. Like, I think that the top 3 in Defensive Player of the Year this year are pretty clear. Who are some of the other guys that you consider? We talked a lot about Giannis's defense in the last discussion, so I don't know that we need to, like, dive deep on it. Before we get to number one, who I know we're going to agree on at this point, who are some of the 100%. Other guys? Yeah, who are some of the other guys you considered, even?
I considered Alex Caruso.
Yeah, I would have Caruso as my best guard defender thus far this year, along with Mikal Bridges.
He has been great, leading the league in steals. He's almost leading the league in deflections. Like, he has been just remarkable for them. I really, really considered throwing him on there. I ended up not doing it. Yeah. It's a little harder for me to justify putting a bench guard. But we'll talk about Caruso a little later, I think, too. And I'll save it for them, but he is having an incredible year, and he has the minutes to justify it now, 28 a game. And the Bulls are just a different team when him and Lonzo are on the floor.
Yeah, I also legitimately considered Evan Mobley for a minute. I'm not going to sit we might talk about Evan later on when we do all defense, because I'll kind of scratch together an all defense team. He wouldn't be on my first team, but I would imagine he will be on my second team. The Cavs have the third best defense in the NBA right now, and he is the best defensive player on the third best defense in the NBA. That is impossible to me. This team has been abysmal defensively over the last 3 years, 30th, 30th, 25th in the league defensively before drafting Evan Mobley. I think that Jared Allen has been really good defensively as well. I don't want to, like, shrink his impact on that. Like, I've never actually been a fan of Jared Allen on defense. I think he's been pretty overrated based on blocks, to be honest. But this year, he's been very good. He's been very, very good defensively, and I've been very impressed. Let's go to number one, though. Number one has to be Draymond Green, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is everything that Steph is for them on offense, Draymond is for them on defense. The way that you were talking about how, like, Draymond is a defensive playmaker. The way he is able to just thwart every single action on the perimeter, then recover to defend the rim. I mean, they have the best defense in the league by far right now. They're allowing 102 points per 100 possessions. They're, like, 2 points better than the second place team per 100.
That's bonkers.
And so much of it is just that guy has been for sure the best defensive player in the league this year. And he's brilliant to watch. Like, there aren't that many players. There are a million players who I can talk about basketball with and learn about basketball from. There aren't that many players who you can learn about basketball from by watching them play. You know what I mean? Where, like, you see somebody do something and you're like, oh, I didn't know that you were actually, like, I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know that you were able to help that way. But the way that he is able to see, recognize actions, recognize plays, recognize cuts, and be able to guard 3-4 guys on possessions is it's like nothing anybody else in the league can do.
I don't know. Look, I've been very clear that, like, I think Draymond Green should have been on the NBA 75 team. Like, I like the whole conversation with Clay versus Draymond Green, like, around NBA 75 kind of broke my brain that, like, Clay was the guy that people were upset about. To me, it's like so clear that Draymond Green is the more important player and has been for a long time to their dynasty. essentially, or whatever, this long extended run of success. Like, I don't even know if you want to call it a dynasty or not, but like whatever you want to call this, where they've been great. And basically since this core has been together, you can make the case that like Rudy Gobert is the scheme, right? You can make a case that, you know, any other big center, Brook Lopez to an extent has been a big portion of the scheme in Milwaukee as a rim protector, right? I'm not sure I've ever seen a non-center who is the scheme in the same way that Draymond Green is the scheme defensively. Like, he unlocks everything that you can do. And like, they don't switch quite as much as what they have in the past, but he's still so good defensively in help, and he's so good as a center defender, which, by the way, he's doing more of this year than he ever has before, and he's one of the most impactful center defenders in the league because of his ability to guard in multiple ball screen situations, his ability to protect the rim with his length. I've just been, I'm blown away. And then on top of it, and look, this is going to be a weird thing to say because we're talking about a defensive award, but I do think that it's worth considering that Draymond Green's defensive ability and his ability to finish possessions with rebounds or with, you know, pick sixes or things like that, whatever you want to say, deflections, etc., his ability to then lead the break and quickly transition to offense legitimately adds points to what Golden State does. Like, I know that this is a defensive award versus an offensive award, but I think that the ability to legitimately improve a team's transition offensive play starts with defense, and that has to be considered on some level.
Kind of. I don't know if I.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm throwing in Draymond's offense. I'm happy to do that with.
Well, that's the only place that you would throw in Draymond's offense, yeah. Right?
I mean, like he's been incredible. I have him. I have him on my All NBA team this year too.
I do too.
I actually agree with you in terms of his actual importance and in terms of the scheme. And you know, you're probably right. He's probably the only non-center player ever who's been this scheme, just because, you know, with like the old illegal defense rules and stuff, you couldn't pull something like that off with a wing.
Right.
So he probably is the only. I mean, there's probably not somebody in 1962 who we're forgetting about just because. Like
the only guy that came to mind when I was thinking about that was Scottie Pippen. Like, I would imagine on some level, like the Bulls look like I'm too young to like know exactly what defensive schemes like Phil Jackson was running with the Bulls, right? But I would imagine that like Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, their ability to completely and utterly shut down the wing, like that probably on some level was the scheme for the Bulls.
Yeah, sure. Right? And back then, so much of defense was just like guard your man, just bear down and guard your man. Yeah. That's what you got to do because the rules were just totally different. And now there are so many more, even if you don't play a zone, there's so many more zone concepts. Like the Warriors use so many zone concepts, which they apply to Draymond, which makes him so much better of a defender that you weren't just weren't allowed to do before 2002 or whatever year it was. Kawhi with the Spurs might be another example of that. I mean, when Kawhi won his couple of defensive players of the year when he was in San Antonio, I mean, that's definitely an example of that. Everything they were able to do defensively was because of him.
But you know what, though? Like, to that point again, like, so much of that was guarding his man. Like, with Dre, it's not even, like, guarding his man. It's guarding his man and simultaneously guarding someone else's man because he's so good in help defense and so intelligent with his positioning. Like, people constantly compare draft prospects to Draymond Green, and I'm just like, this guy is unlike anything we've ever seen on a basketball court. His brain is a supercomputer. Like, he is, I think, legitimately one of the 5 smartest players or 10 smartest players to ever play in the NBA. Point blank, period. You can't get by with the physical tools that he has without that. You can't be as effective as he is on the court without being, like, he's, when Draymond Green entered the NBA, he was like a 260-pound overweight center. He's still like not in the best shape of, like, based off of NBA player type, right? And that guy is one of the 15 best players in the NBA. Are you kidding me? He is, though. Like, he is unequivocally one of the best players in the NBA, yep, and he's the best defensive player in the NBA. It's Draymond Green is honestly, I think he's like one of my two or three favorite players in the league.
It's great.
I could talk about Draymond Green for hours on end. Okay, let's go to Coach of the Year.
Yeah. All right, Coach of the Year. Should I go first again?
Yeah, go for it.
Coach of the Year is hard.
There are a lot of good ones this year.
There are no bad coaches anymore.
I disagree.
You notice that?
But
I feel like...
As someone who bets on basketball, I disagree.
I feel like there are way fewer bad coaches. Like, there used to be way more coaches who were just, like, behind the eight ball completely.
Well, we got rid of Luke Walton. That was nice. Yeah. Wasn't good for my bank account, but it was nice from
a really hard. Like, you could just always vote for Eric Spoelstra. If you just always wanted to vote for Eric Spoelstra for Coach of the Year, I'd be like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
You can literally always justify voting for Eric Spoelstra just whenever you want. It's just there. This award gets very hard. I put Steve Kerr third.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
I know conventionally this award is basically which team exceeded expectations the most.
Right.
My first guy off, I strongly consider JB Bickerstaff.
I have JB very high.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a hard and unprovable award that, right, I'm like, whatever. That's fine. I mean, I had JB Bickerstaff very high. The reason why I didn't put him on was because I think the Cavs outperformed my expectations. Bickerstaff's done a really good job. I wouldn't have considered him if I didn't think that. But I think the Cavs outperforming expectations is more because of a misevaluation of our expectations than because they've been coached into something else. Like Evan Mobley being this good against right off the bat is because Evan Mobley is this good. You know what I mean?
I get that, but I firmly disagree with it also. I think the part of what you're saying is right for sure. I have JB Bickerstaff at number one. Like, I'm just going to say that from the jump. JB Bickerstaff is my coach of the year so far.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy with this. Think about the way the league has gone over the last 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, whatever we want to say, right? How many teams start 2 7-footers? Like, zero, essentially? Cavs start 3. Like, the fact that they've been able to make a scheme work with Lauri Markkanen, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen, it's on the players. Like, I don't want to take anything away from the players. They've done an incredible job. And frankly, those 7-footers have very complementary skill sets of one another, especially offensively. Jared Allen's an incredible rim runner. Evan Mobley's the connective tissue playmaker. Lauri Markkanen's the spacer, right? Like, even theoretically, the skill sets do work together on paper. The problem is defense. And for them to have a top three defense in the league starting 3 7-footers, two of whom, like, I think Jared Allen's improved a lot in terms of mobility. He's still like a center in terms of mobility, right? Like, he's not like even a, I'd say like maybe he's a plus center in terms of mobility.
He's a very good drop center.
Yes, he is a pure drop center. You do not want him switched out onto an island with other guards. Lauri Markkanen is another pure drop center, essentially. Like, he's not quick enough to guard other players. Evan Mobley is fucking phenomenal and incredible and unbelievable, and he can guard literally everyone on the court. But to make it work whenever you have two of those guys who aren't all that mobile is unlike anything that is currently happening in the NBA right now. They've also dealt now with multiple injuries with Ricky Rubio and Colin Sexton. I don't think we should give too much credit for the Rubio injury, given that he's played most of the minutes so far that we're accounting for within this season. But losing Colin Sexton is a legitimate adjustment. Like, you could maybe make the case that it made them play Rubio more and thus made life easier for JB Bickerstaff. But I think that it's remarkable that we're sitting here. The Cavs are, if I remember correctly, like 21-17 right now, something in that ballpark. And nobody saw that. I didn't see that. I didn't think it was close. And that goes back to the expectations game. But I also think it's just worth saying that it's more than that. Like, they're doing something that is unlike anyone else in the NBA right now. They are zagging while the rest of the league is zigging, whatever you want to say. And they're making it work. And to me, that's coaching as much as it is talent, because this team is not overly talented, right? Like, they're a talented NBA team with a lot of young guys, but like, they're not a team that I thought would be 500 yet at this point. And I think JB Bickerstaff's put them in a position to be able to do that.
You make a very convincing argument.
Yeah.
That said, I still have them at 4.
Yeah, I get that. Let's go to number 2. I don't know that we need to talk about Steve Kerr. Like, Steve Kerr, like, has put these guys in like an incredible position.
Exactly. I mean, look, all the stuff that you said about Steph and the way they run their offense and the motion that they have and just the general beauty they have in their offense. Like, yes, Steph is the linchpin for that and the most important guy, but somebody's got to design that thing, and somebody has to get buy-in, and somebody has to make sure all those players are playing their role to the best of their abilities. And just like, yep, all their role guys are just maxing out their potential and the way that they play. They're so cohesive on both sides of the ball. They're just an unbelievably well-coached team. Number 2, yeah. I have Taylor Jenkins.
Was also my number 2.
Wow, yeah. I think he's done an incredible job. I mean, they missed Ja for 12 games, and they went 10-2 over those games. It was a little bit of a light stretch, but they started the year, about a month into the season, they were 30th in points allowed per possession. And then in those 12 games that Ja missed, they were number 1 in points allowed per possession. I mean, they could not have turned... They just couldn't have turned their season around more. Getting Dylan Brooks back was a huge part of that for them.
Yeah. I also want to call someone out. I've been a little bit critical of Jaren Jackson in the past defensively, not living up to what we thought he would be as a prospect. Jaren Jackson has taken the leap defensively too. He's been really, really good defensively. He's been great as a weak side rim protector, great as a primary rim protector in the moments where he has to be, and he's been very switchable on the perimeter. I think he's a big part of why that scheme has worked so far.
Yeah, I like that extension that they gave him. Their core just makes a lot of sense together. But Taylor Jenkins has done a great job. I love what they have going in Memphis. Ja is progressing not even how you would want. I mean, beyond what you would hope for if you're the Grizzlies. Yep. I mean, he is an all NBA caliber point guard now. I think Jenkins has done a really great job putting together that team.
Yep. And then who do you have at number 1?
Billy Donovan.
Yeah, I had Billy Donovan at 3. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, talking about exceeding expectations, he's, to me, putting together young guys in a position to win where they develop is certainly not easy. But, like, mm-hmm. to me, the hardest thing that a coach can do is take all of these veterans who have already kind of become the players that they're going to be, who already know what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and they already have egos because they have all the success. And there's a little bit of clashing here and there. And then a coach says, you know what? I'm going to find a way to make all this work anyway. I think Billy Donovan's best, and I covered Billy when I was covering the Thunder, I think his best trait as a coach is just his general lack of stubbornness. At the beginning of his coaching career, I remember one of the criticisms of him was, I don't really know what Billy Donovan's principles are as a coach. What does he value? And I think the answer to that, as we've seen over time, is he values adjustment to the players. His first year as a head coach, 15-16 Thunder, that was the Russ and KD Thunder, played totally different from the following year. KD leaves, the Russ MVP year. Then the next year, you have Russ PG, totally different team. Then Russ gets traded. You have the Chris Paul Thunder, and he's playing like 3-point guard lineups to close games, which is just, and it's a total motion, ball movement offense, and they totally exceed expectations. And now these Bulls play a completely different way. They've exceeded expectations, especially defensively. A lot of that is because Ball and Caruso have both been spectacular, but he's got Vucevic playing good defense. It's another situation kind of like Kerr, where it's like, I feel like every guy there is just maximizing their talent level right now and maximizing their production in their roles. I think he's done a great job this year.
The only reason that I had him at number 3 as opposed to 1 or 2 was because I think a lot of the credit there also goes to Arturis Karnisovas, he would be my pick for executive of the year personally. And I think that Arturis made life on Billy Donovan as easy as possible in that regard by acquiring players who have wholly unselfish mindsets. Because I agree with you, the hardest thing that a coach can do is make a big group of veteran free agents work together and gel together from the jump, right? I think that this group, and particularly the acquisitions of Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso, like, look, like we just named DeMar DeRozan like fifth on our MVP ballot, right? Like, we're not minimizing that. That's legitimately been the acquisition of the year so far for Karnisovas, right? But the additions of Alex Caruso and Lonzo Ball, two guys that are wholly unselfish, don't care if they have the ball, don't care if they, like, have to go out and defend for 35 minutes a night, going out and drafting someone like Ayo Dosunmu, going out and acquiring someone like Javonte Green, who both of those guys just go out and run their ass off defensively for, you know, 15, 20 minutes a night. I think that Arturis Karnisovas deserves just as much, if not more, frankly, credit for this roster in constructing it in a way that makes sense based on personalities, skill sets, unselfishness, and everything than Billy Donovan, frankly. And, like, that's okay. Like, I think that they both deserve an immense amount of credit, which is why I have Billy Donovan at third. But I that was the tiebreaker for me as to why I went with J.B. Bickerstaff 1, Taylor Jenkins 2.
Yeah, I would just give it to both of them.
Yeah, I agree. I get that. Like, I think that's reasonable.
Executive of the year, and I'd just give it to both of them.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Rookie of the Year. I've talked a lot about Rookie of the Year on the podcast. Like, I have Evan Mobley 1, I have Scottie Barnes 2, Franz Wagner 3. I'll just kind of give you the floor on this one, because I think listeners of the show have heard me extrapolate for hours on end at this point about it.
Yeah, so I have Evan Mobley 1, I have Franz Wagner 2, and I have Scottie Barnes 3.
Sure. So why do you have Scottie and Franz flipped?
You know, it was Franz versus Scottie Barnes. It was really, really tough, just because it's hard to evaluate Franz Wagner because he just kind of has the leeway to do whatever he wants on a bad team.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of letting him take over and say, go get your stuff. I think his game, honestly, I just think his game is so refined right now.
Yeah.
Franz Wagner. Like, he's shooting well, he's passing well, he's taking guys off the dribble with this kind of this maturity that you don't normally see. And so that kind of was why I put him up there. He leads all rookies in scoring right now, and he's doing it on totally solid. It's not like a, you know, Jalen Green 15 points a game situation. He's doing it on like 55% true shooting, like completely respectable efficiency. So it was really close. Scottie Barnes, a hell of a defender. He's going to be awesome. It was really close, but that was why I went with Franz.
Yeah, no, I don't really have a... I think those two are close. I think Evan Mobley is the clear pick at one, and then those two are close enough to where I don't really have a strong opinion either way. Like, I would go Scottie, because I think that over the first, like, 30 games of the year, Scottie was probably a little bit better than what Franz was, but Franz has been really good lately. Scottie's also been really good lately as well, but I would give the... you know, nod to Franz over the last 10 games since he's entered into a more, I guess that I would say, central offensive role within the Orlando Magic. I like how scalable his game is something I've said before on the show. Like, he's a guy that I think could play for the Warriors just as well as he would play for Orlando right now. The numbers wouldn't be the same, obviously, but I think he'd have no problem, like, entering that scheme and being fine, which is a real credit to him, even as a rookie. Yeah, no, I think that that's all. I think that's all right.
Yeah, a really interesting thing, progression in the NBA right now, is that, like, we used to never ever see rookies who were really good defensively. Like, we'd always say he's been really good for a rookie, or maybe he played really, really hard and you saw the potential, or like maybe he was really good guarding the ball, but he gambled too much, or he didn't know where to be, couldn't figure out schemes. And I feel like every year now there are like three rookies who were like, oh, that guy's really good already. Like, Evan Mobley, just, like, ridiculously good already. Scottie Barnes, really good already.
Pretty good. Davion
Mitchell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Davion Mitchell, like that's a good defender. You know, even you know, the last couple years, it was like Lou Dort as a rookie, just this undrafted dude was like, that guy's a really good defender right now.
Yep.
We're seeing more. I don't know why it is. I it might just be a coincidence. I don't know why it is, but I feel like there are more, or maybe I'm just wrong, but I feel like there are more NBA ready defenders than there used to be now.
No, I think there are. I think that my theory on that would be that teams in general, I think, have gotten better at evaluating defense than they were in the past. Even like in the 8 years that I've been doing draft evaluation, I think there are more refined opinions among front office members that I've spoken to about how good a guy's defense is. I think before it would be like, oh yeah, like we'll just teach them our scheme, like it'll be fine, as opposed to, hey, let's draft these guys that are really good and reactive defensively. It's hard though. Like I think this year particularly though is like an anomaly. Like I think it's just like totally random that we have Evan Mobley and Davion and these guys that are great defensively. Like next year's draft will not be like this in terms of having this many great defenders early on. Let's go to most improved. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I don't love this award in general.
it's such a silly award. Because somebody always comes back to me and says, no, my guy is way better than your guy. I'm like, it's not who's better. It's who improved the most. It's the only award that you can make the argument for by arguing that your guy was worse last year. You know, it's so weird. Such a weird award and a weird concept. Should I just rattle them off? This year was hard. There's not like someone who's really, really made a leap, except for one guy who I thought was my pretty comfortable first choice. But number three, I put DeJounte Murray.
Yep, that's number two on my list.
I just think his passing has been on a different level this year. And I've always really liked his game, and he just seems to have put it a lot better more. I don't put second-year guys. I'm not going to put like Desmond Bane. Like I don't put second-year guys.
I think that DeJounte Murray has been a lot more comfortable in half-court settings as a ball handler, particularly. Like, before, I loved his ability in transition. I loved his passing ability, like, out on the break. I loved his scoring ability out on the break. This year, it seems like in the half-court particularly, there's a real pace that he's operating with that has changed from what it's been previously. And he's gone from being a guy that I thought was, like, yeah, he'll be like, you know, in the 20 to 30 range in terms of overall value to, I would say he's very clearly like going to be a top, you know, 12 point guard in the league at some point at this point. Like, I think he's really good.
He is a hell of a defender.
Yeah.
Like, really a hell of a defender. Number two, I put your boy Jared Allen.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. I like that. I don't have him on mine, but I like it. Yeah.
It's not just the defense. Like, he is a really, he was always a good pick and roll center because he was such a lob threat, but now he's making plays. Like, he's a much better passer as well. He's really making decisions with the ball. He's not just finishing lobs. He's able to finish around the rim, like with skill. I think the counting numbers are a little bit better. I don't think they fully represent how much better I think he is as a player right now. I think he's become a really, really good player.
Yeah. And then who do you have at number one? I would imagine we're going to have the same, right?
Miles Bridges.
That's mine as well. Yeah.
I will take it back to the last time I was on this podcast. Like, when was that? Over the summer.
Yeah.
And we talked about Miles Bridges' last month of last season. When we were, I think we were ranking Eastern Conference teams, and we were discussing, like, Miles Bridges averaged 21-7 over the last month of last season and shot like 42% from three.
Yep.
Is it real? Because if it is, he's going to win Most Improved Player next year. And then what do you know? Here we are.
It's real.
It's real. He's awesome. And oh my God, he's like beyond awesome. It's not a reason to vote for him, but he really has a case as like most. Like one of the most fun players in the league to watch. His I mean the pairing
with him and LaMelo is unbelievable. It's so much
fun.
His shooting has regressed since like the steamy start that it was on. Like he was unbelievable at the beginning of the year. He's shooting 32 from three now. I think he's very clearly the most improved player in the league. He's averaging like 20 points and 7 rebounds and like doing everything that you would hope that someone like him would do. His passing is really good as well. I had Miles Bridges 1, I had DeJounte Murray 2, and I had, Darius Garland was my 3rd, actually. I had Darius Garland at 3. Just the pace and tempo he's playing as an on-ball player this year, I think, has been remarkable. He's another guy where, like, a lot of what we're seeing this year, it was there last year, like, at the end of the year. He was actually really, really good to close the year and, like, by the midpoint of last year. But I just think people are actually recognizing it now. And despite the fact that defenses are playing him differently, like he is their primary scoring and passing threat, he's adjusted to it. And he's made the Cavs like at least passable on offense, despite the fact that they're playing three centers. It's really incredible to me. Okay, 6th man of the year. This is an award that, again, I do not care about.
All right, we'll go quick then. I'm scrolling to it. Where did I put my 6th man? Here we go. Number 3, I had Montrezl Harrell.
Okay.
LaMarcus Aldridge just narrowly missed. Quite honestly, I'm not that enthusiastic about Montrezl Harrell. He's fallen off the last few weeks, but got off to such a hot start and was responsible for the Wizards' hot start. That it's still a large enough portion of the season to where I feel like he deserves to be on the ballot. Yep. The advanced numbers always favor him. And the Wizards have been much better when he's been playing. So I'm good with that. LaMarcus Aldridge, by the way, what a great story. I mean, he could end up getting onto the ballot by the end of the year. He's been the best mid-range shooter of any big man in the league this year. He's maybe been the best mid-range shooter of any player in the league. I think he's shooting 58% on long twos, just like obscene.
It's impossible.
But I mean, he's what a great story with what he went through last year, being able to come back this year and play great. But I have Harrell 3. Should I go to 2?
Yeah, just go to 2 and 1.
All right, I'll just run through it. Number 2, I had Alex Caruso.
That was my number 2.
And we'll talk about Caruso in a sec. Number 1, I had Tyler Hero.
I also had Hero at 1. I honestly didn't 3? Even bother mentioning a 3rd guy. I think those two are like the protest. Clear. Yeah, like I just don't care about 6th man of the year, to be honest. Like it's
we
got to
get out of
award.
Our echo chamber, Sam. Like we discussed none of this. We ran through none of this, and our picks are too similar.
Yeah, I know. It's frustrating. I wonder if all NBA is going to be that different for us. I think that's what we're up to now. We're up to all NBA. Guards, I have Steph Curry, DeMar DeRozan. I need my list. Holy shit. I didn't think I would. Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Nikola Jokic. That's my first team. So the top 5 MVP guys.
So I did it a little differently because I had DeMar as a forward.
Okay.
I just thought, so DeMar was on my 2nd team. So I have the same guys. I have Curry, Giannis, Durant, Jokic, and I put Ja Morant 1st team.
Yeah, Ja Morant was my 3rd guard. So he was he's my 1st, 2nd team guard. So, talk about Ja. What has impressed you?
Everything. Oh, my God. He looks like he gets compared to Westbrook so much. I think he's got a little more MVP Derrick Rose in him.
That's the name I brought up to an NBA scout yesterday, actually.
Yeah, the way he attacks the rim is so unbelievably ferocious. It really feels like MVP Rose. I know early in the year, the on-off numbers were just horrendous for him. At one point, they were like 14 points per 100 worse when he was on the floor. Seth Partnow has, the analytics guru Seth Partnow has talked about how those numbers were really noisy. They've come back down. Now they're down like way, way, way more reasonable number now. And I have to imagine that's going to turn. He is such a spectacular passer.
Yeah.
The way that he is able to find cutters just runs that entire Memphis offense. I mean, people talk about the breaks and the scoring. He's shooting way better. I don't have the numbers called up right now, but he's shooting way better than he has. If he's going to be a jump shooter like this, like, I don't know how you stop him, because not that many guys who have that kind of athleticism and speed also have a changeup at his age. And now his ability to run pick and roll, run half court offense, control pace, it's pretty unmatched. Like, he is really one of the best, one of the absolute top tier one point guards in the league now. And deserves, I considered throwing him on, you know, number five on my MVP ballot. I ended up going DeMar, but he's pretty great.
All right, give me your second team All-NBA.
Yeah, and to be clear, the reason why I didn't put DeMar first team was just because I think there are more good guards, more All-NBA deserving guards this year than there are All-NBA deserving forwards.
So that's a good point.
So I slid DeMar over to forward just so I could get the right the guys. So I wanted to make sure that I maximized the best 15 as opposed to the best five in the first team.
Yeah.
My second team, my guards are Donovan Mitchell and Chris Paul. My forwards are DeMar and LeBron, and my center is Rudy Gobert.
Okay, I have Ja Morant and Chris Paul. I have Paul George and LeBron. And then I have Joel Embiid. And I know that Joel has missed time. I just can't get past the fact that I think on a per-minute basis, Joel Embiid is one of the five most impactful players in the NBA. I think that he is damn close to Rudy Gobert offensively, or defensively, I'm sorry. He's not quite what Rudy is defensively, but he's close enough. And offensively, it's just not a comparison. Like, I totally understand that Rudy, I think Rudy deserves a lot of credit, and he's definitely my third team center. I just can't get past Joel Embiid at number, at like that second spot.
That's fine. That was a really difficult one. Gobert has been so important defensively this year. He's been the best rim protector in the league again. And with Embiid, the efficiency is down with Embiid. He's shooting under 50% on two-pointers this year, which, I mean, I had Embiid third team, and it was really close. But just seeing the efficiency down with Embiid and Gobert, honestly, Gobert is a better offensive player now than he's ever been. He can do some stuff with the ball. He can post up when he needs to, and efficiently. Like, he, I think people think of him as just a rim-diving center and absolutely nothing more. Like, I think people think of him the way they thought of, like, Clippers' DeAndre Jordan. It's not the case anymore. Gobert has just been so valuable for them, but it was really close, and you're not wrong to put Embiid there. Should we go third team?
Okay. Yeah, give me your third team.
Should we go honorable mentions before we go third team, guys we considered?
No, let's go third team, because I wonder if we're going to have some differences here.
Okay, cool. So guards, I went... Yeah, we'll have differences, because third team is hard. Guards, I went Devin Booker and Trae Young.
Okay, I did not have Devin Booker, so that's interesting. I do have Trae Young as a third team guard, though. I have Zach LaVine in that spot.
Yeah, I considered LaVine. Forwards, I went Draymond Green and Luka. And center, I went Embiid.
Yeah, so unfortunately, we are a bit similar. I went Draymond Green and Luka, third team forwards as well.
Okay, well, let's talk about Zach LaVine versus Devin Booker.
So yeah, interesting comparison between those two. I went with Zach LaVine almost purely based off of the numbers. I don't feel awesome about that necessarily, but Zach across the board is just kind of better. Like, he's averaging 27 points a game versus Devin Booker's 24. He's averaging, I think, like the same number of rebounds per game. He's averaging, I believe, like the same number of assists per game, and he's doing so on just about the same efficiency, or no, he's actually doing so on much better efficiency, I'm sorry, than what Devin Booker is so far. So I literally just went by the numbers on those two. I think that, like, they're so close in terms of, like, when you watch them on court impact, like, it looks very similar, but, like, I frankly just did it by the numbers on those guys. Like, I think that there's a good case for both if you want to put both.
Yeah. You could easily have both. LaVine was my second guy who I had off. I actually had Drew Holiday a little ahead of him. Not that I probably don't have sufficient evidence to put those guys up, but Drew's been so good defensively for them. Like, you talk about the Bucks defense raising up. It's like, I think Holiday's having a great year. But
Thinking about my second team all defense team that I have to put together, Drew will definitely be second team all defense for me.
For me, with Booker, the problem with Booker this year is he's shot way worse inside the 3-point line. Like, he hasn't been nearly the finisher that he's been in seasons past, but he's shooting 42 from three now. I think he's a superior passer and a superior defender, which kind of broke the barrier there a little bit for me. But I mean,
I don't think that's wrong for what it's worth. I don't know about passer. I think they're both pretty close as passers. Defensively, though, I think Devin has improved a lot defensively. Not to say Zach is bad defensively, because I don't think he is anymore. Like, I think he's gotten to a point where, like, he's hit a level where it's okay. I do think Devin is a bit better defensively.
I always thought Levine's defense was overly criticized, to be honest. Just because he always tried really hard. It was never like it was never like Zach
it's
Levine
strength.
Doesn't.
It's not. Yeah. It's not working.
It was never Zach Levine doesn't care about defense. And it's like, so much of it is if you put in the effort to just work really, really hard at defense, eventually, if you care that much and you're really athletic, you'll probably become passable at it. And so, I'm with you on that front. Levine's having a great year. And Trey, meanwhile, is playing for a losing team. But it's just like, this dude is putting up outrageous numbers. And you know what? Yeah. For all the talk of the new foul rules and how that is going to attack guys like Trey and Harden, you know what? It has affected Trey. He's not getting to the line nearly as much, and he's better. He is shooting better than he ever has. He makes passes that should not be possible. He makes these wraparound passes. Zach Lowe was talking about it. I think it was Zach Lowe who was talking about it on his podcast the other day, where Trey is able to make, I think he was talking about Trey, if I remember right, where he's able to make cross-court passes that people his height can't really make. Normally you see six guys making these cross-court passes who can see over the defense. And with Trey,
he throws like crazy wraparounds.
Right,
yeah.
Trey throws them under the defense, where he is able to go up at the rim and then wrap around and find guys in the corner. And the Hawks' defensive problems, he's a big part of it, but he is a major reason why they're scoring like maniacs still. And he's averaging like 29 and 10. It's just crazy numbers he's putting up.
Yeah, like if I'm being honest with myself, I think that he's probably had a better individual season than Chris Paul. It's just that Chris Paul's ability to organize the Suns, I think that it goes beyond individual with Chris Paul, basically, I guess is my point, where his ability to organize the Suns defensively as well as offensively is just so drastic that I can't really look past it. And also, that's a big reason why I feel like I do always end up underrating how good Devin Booker is because of that fact. And that's probably somewhat unfair to Devin Booker. I get that. But, it's tough. Like, Devin Booker, I think, would have been my number two guard that I left off.
Yeah. Just kind of thinking about it. I feel too, by the way.
Fred should be an all-star this year.
On one. My goodness, is he having a season?
Fred should be an all-star this year. Like, I have strong takes otherwise. Like, I felt bad leaving off Donovan Mitchell as well. I did not have him. Like, I don't feel great about that, right? Like, Donovan's been great this year. His efficiency is a little bit better now. He's scoring a little bit better inside the basket.
I mean,
no, I know. Yeah. And part of that is because I did DeMar and the guards, and you did DeMar as a forward, which frankly, like, was probably the smart move. Like, I think that you probably put in more thought into this than I did in terms of like getting guys into slots that you wanted. I think you were probably right to do that. And like, what you would have, if you included DeMar, you'd have Donovan like fifth, right? Among your guards.
Correct. Yeah. I would have had him third team along with probably Trey, and I would have bumped Booker.
What do we do with Anthony Davis? That was one thing that I really struggled with. Yeah, because he sneaky has played like 27 games. Like, it's not like he hasn't played like a you know, a crazy amount of like misses this season, given how much other guys have missed games due to COVID absences and everything. I really struggled with not putting him on some level, just because it's freaking Anthony Davis. But I don't know, like, I kind of just don't think he deserves to be on.
No, me neither. I mean, it's tough. I mean, look, we don't have, neither of us, we haven't even mentioned Damian Lillard. Who?
No, we haven't. But like, I don't even think Dame's had a good year, though, is the problem.
No, me yeah. neither. But you know, there are some major guys who, I mean, look, I don't think Luka is a guarantee, which I kind of thought he was going to be a guarantee going into this, and I was like, eh, like the Mavs are getting pummeled when he's on the floor. They're like 8 points yeah. per 100 worse when he's playing, and they're struggling to put good lineups around him. And you know, he's putting up 25, 9, and 8. And at some point, you got to just be like, this guy is one of the most dynamic players in the league. He's putting up 25, 9, and 8. And he deserves to get on there. And I do believe that. But he's not a guarantee to be on there, I think, like he was in years past. It's a weird – it's just been a kind of a weird year for a lot of guys.
Yeah. With Luka, and another guy that I want to mention is James Harden. Like, James Harden should not be on these teams right now. James Harden has been much better over the last, like, month True. Of the year.
He'll probably make his way onto it by the end of the year, I bet.
I think that, yeah. like, there's a good chance he makes his way onto it by the end of the year. In the case of someone like Luka, I feel similarly, where I think he's been pretty good to kind of... No, or was pretty bad to start the year because he was out of shape and was just like very heavy, it looked like. And he's gotten better and worked his way into the season. They look a little bit better, I think, now than what they have in the past. And by the way, like, I don't think we could get Kristaps Porzingis in the same tier as these top three centers. Kristaps has been much better. Like, I think that that's a big critical part of this turnaround as well. Bradley Beal was an interesting one for me. He hasn't been awesome because the three-point ball is not falling, but I don't think you can ignore his impact on the fact that the Wizards are have been hovering around the playoff slash play-in mark so far this year.
Better passer than he's ever been right now.
Better passer than he's ever been. I would go Jaylen Brown over Jason Tatum at this point in the season. Don't know if that will last necessarily, but I think that Jaylen had a case if you wanted to go with forwards and try to load up the guards. Trying to think who else here. Jimmy Butler is another guy. Like, I ultimately, when I was trying to do some tiebreakers, Jimmy has played 23 games so far, and that was my tiebreaker as to why not on him as opposed to other guys, right? Like, Jimmy's been incredible in some respect in keeping them afloat. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Van Vliet. I think that might have been it on my honorable mentions list.
Yeah, that's a good list.
Yeah. All defense. This is going to be
fun. Carl Anthony Towns deserves an honorable mention, too.
Yeah, it's just hard with centers because yeah, it's really like, hard I think with the centers. Three I mean, centers.
The thing that you might be able to do, which I hate doing, I think the positional versatility is cool to do. But I don't like doing it when it's dishonest. Like last year, they yeah. made Embiid and Jokic eligible at both. Because the way it works is you go two guards, two forwards, and a center. In All-Star, yeah. it's different. All-Star, it's two guards and three front court players. But like last year, yeah. so you could fudge the ballot, they made Embiid and Jokic center and forward eligible. It's like Nikola Jokic right. has never played power forward. He didn't play power forward for a second. He's a center.
No,
Embiid is a center.
If you're going to make... If you're going to make Jokic a second position, you make him a guard because he's like more their point guard than yeah, anything else.
That's true. That's totally true. And so like, if you really want to get Towns on, I mean, what you could do, I think there is a cogent argument that if there were no positions at all, Towns is more deserving than like Luka. Towns is having a great year. And Minnesota is another team yeah. that's outperforming expectations. And Towns has been excellent. And I think
Fred, the people know that the Minnesota Timberwolves are a big part of my heart right now. I love the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Because you want A-Rod to do well.
God damn it.
Gotta pull for A-Rod.
I don't really care. A-Rod seems fine. But I just love watching that team so much.
They're fun. They're one of my three favorite teams. Towns has really been amazing. So if you want, what you could do is you could probably, I assume they'll do it again, you could put, you know, Embiid or Jokic or Towns at forward if those guys are forward center eligible. But to me, that's like, it's like, even though it's eligible, it's different than like, I assume DeMar DeRozan, even though DeMar's actually played more forward this year than guard, if we're going to go by true nominal, but like they play him at the four, you know, when they have Caruso and Lonzo and Levine out there. So, you know, but if you put him at guard, that's fine. Like DeRozan, you can totally justify DeRozan as a guard. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I kind of just wanted my top five to be my top five MVP.
Sure, and I have no problem with DeRozan at five. That's different to me than putting Embiid at forward, you know?
Right. No, I agree. I agree totally. Okay, all defense teams real quick, because we have to get you out of here because you have to go to a Knicks game.
I do.
Let me do this off the top of my head before you back check me on this, because I did not prepare all defense, so this is going to be fun.
Great.
So I would have Gobert at center. I would have Draymond and Giannis at the forwards. I would have Caruso and Mikal Bridges as my guards. Is that your five?
That's literally my entire five, yeah.
Okay. And then I would have Drew as a second team. Oh God, the next guard. Oh God. It's center. I would have Joel, I think, still at center. Who would I have at my forwards?
I hate this. We're defense. 7-for-7 right now.
I think these other ones are going to be the ones that change though. God, I wish that, like, here's the fun one. Like, could you put Miles Turner as a forward? Because he plays a lot with Sabonis.
You might be able to, but, you know, I thought about Miles Turner. You know, if I were doing my real ballot, I'd sit down, I'd study it, I'd really go for it. I'm just going off of the Pacers basketball I've watched this year. I actually don't think Miles Turner has been quite as good this year as he was last year. There are too many...
I agree with that.
There are too many times where I've seen somebody go at the rim, and Miles Turner is just kind of not really contesting the same way that he used to. And I think he's still a very good defender and a very good player, but I think he had a stronger all defense argument last year and the year before.
Yeah, no, I don't feel
the
need
to
fudge
the ballot to put Miles Turner on there.
Oh, I would have Evan Mobley on my list, actually. Like, I frankly, they're a top three defense. He's the best defender on that team, in my opinion.
Sure.
He's the guy that makes the scheme work. I've talked about that at length. So that would be a forward. I have one forward and one guard left. Oh man. Oh, this is gross. What would I do at the other guard? I would consider DeJounte. I would consider Matisse Thybulle. I would probably go. I would probably go. Give me your second team.
Sure. So my guards are, I have Drew Holiday and I have Lonzo Ball.
Okay. I would not have both Ball and Caruso.
I liked having Ball and Caruso for the sake of the podcast. I thought it would give us a nice jumping point into how important they are for the Bulls defense. But I think those guys have both been spectacular. Lonzo's length, he just uses his length so well. And those guys are the head of that defense is top 10. And I don't think anybody saw that coming. And it all starts. I mean, you were talking about the 90s Bulls. How about the 2022 Bulls? With like, it all starts at the top with those guys. Just, you cannot get to the middle of the floor against that team when those two guys are on the floor. And
No, that's definitely true.
It changes everything about that defense, because the best offense comes when you are able to get to the middle of the floor. And then once you're in the middle, you can get to the rim or you can spray back out for threes or something like that. And you cannot get to the middle of the floor against Lonzo and Caruso. I'm not going to kill anybody if they leave Lonzo off. There are a lot of great defenders. I had DeJounte on my list. I had Fred VanVleet on my list.
Fred's a good one. Yep.
I had Derek White on my list.
Derek White's a good one.
But, you know, Lonzo's been great, and Drew Holiday's Drew Holiday. I had Embiid as my second center. And I left off Evan Mobley. He was my first guy I left off. I don't have a good reason. I just did. I put Thybulle as one of my second team forwards. And I threw Dylan Brooks on there. That Memphis defense has totally changed since he came back. He is so good guarding guys he's so good at guarding guys who run around screens. Any kind of screen. He fights so hard to stay within the way he's supposed to guard a guy on a screen. And he's so slippery and he's so freaking physical. I love the way he is guarded this year. I think he's been incredible for them, and he's a huge reason for their success and their lead defensively.
Yeah, I don't mind that. Yeah, let's go with Dylan Brooks. Fuck it. Why not? I'm in.
That dude is
he's legit. He's worth it. Yeah, like he's a good choice.
He will punch you in the face. He is so physical guarding the perimeter.
Yeah, I'm trying to think like who else did you have at the forward spots?
Mobley was the only guy who I had there, and then once I had those guys, I was like, I think this looks good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's go. Wait, who was your other forward then?
Thybul.
Okay.
I just put him as a forward. Yeah,
Matisse or Brooks. This is a weird statement for me to make, but like, how much do you consider offense allowing a guy to stay on the court in the all defense team stuff? Do you just consider it like this guy plays X number of minutes and thus like
so
plays
X number of defensive possessions? Are you going to pitch me on Gary Payton II right now? Is that why?
I kind of want to.
I knew it was going to be Gary Payton II. Like, no, I mean, to me,
he's so good.
he's unbelievable. But to me, like, aggregate impact means something to me. You know, like Dylan Brooks.
I
mean,
I was firmly on that side last year with Matisse Thybul. I was firmly on that side 2 years ago with Chris Dunn as well. So like, I do agree with that. I'm also considering that in regard to Thybul as my second team guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Dylan Brooks has missed half the season, but I felt fine throwing him on because we're halfway in and he's playing now. And by the time the season is done, he'll have played 60-something games and it'll be no problem. With GP2, like, he plays 17 minutes a game. Like, it's tough. He is a great defender, and you can tell me when he's on the floor, he's a more valuable defensive guard than, like, Lonzo Ball. And I will probably agree with you. But it's hard to argue that he has been more impactful towards good defense in 17 minutes than Lonzo has been in starter minutes.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's actually a really good way to put it. Okay. This has been fun,
but I
Fred.
Love GP2.
We got to get Yachty.
He is, oh my God,
he's so
good. He fun to watch.
He's
good at everything.
On a permanent basis, I do legitimately think he is probably the best defensive guard in the league.
That's fine.
Like on a per minute basis. I agree with you. Like
I have a soft spot.
You have to be able to play.
Yeah. I have a soft spot for journeyman guards who are incredible defensively and can't figure it out offensively. I think it's because I covered Andre Robertson. And I just grew to appreciate that player. I used to talk about defense with Andre Robertson all the time, and I loved talking about defense with him. The guy just took so much pride in that side of the floor, and I developed an appreciation. I mean, he wasn't a journeyman. He was a first-round pick, but I developed an appreciation for guys who clearly had that same dedication but couldn't get there because of their offensive game. And I feel like so many of those guys, it's like if you just find the fit. Like when I covered Peyton in Washington the whole time, I was like, if he could find the right fit, he's going to stick. And like, I feel the same way about like Shaq Harrison, where I'm like, if someone can just find the right fit for Shaq Harrison, that dude is going to stick. And everyone's going to be like, have the same reaction they've had this season to GP2, you know?
Yeah. I'm concerned that Shaq has had a lot of chances at this point, unfortunately.
I know, but I still believe it. I mean, he's another guy who just gets into guys like Javon Carter. Another one where I kind of have felt that way forever, where he's just a hound on the ball.
Yeah, no, I agree. Fred, this was fun. I enjoyed this. We'll have you back to do awards at some point because I truly, genuinely appreciate how much care you put into it. Like, I think that it's really important and essential. as someone that actually does vote on these awards. So, Fred, what do you want to pitch? What do you want to plug?
Nothing in particular. You can read my stuff, read about the Knicks over at The Athletic New York. You can follow me on Twitter at Fred Katz. I guess this is going up in a couple days. So, just check out The Athletic, subscribe to The Athletic, and follow me on social media. That's about it.
Fred is the best, folks. Just the absolute best. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. I have a mock draft up that you can go read that went live on Thursday. I have rookie rankings up that you can read that went live last Tuesday. I have podcasts up for the last little while. Seth and I did a really, really fun 2019 redraft. Go subscribe to the YouTube channel. It is Game Theory W. Sam Vecini, I believe, after the backslash for that. You can find the link in the bio somewhere. So until next time, though, we will talk soon, folks. Bye.